welcome to the Red Rock Fantasy Basketball Podcast. My name is Josh Lloyd, and today I'm joined by Jeff Stotts, and we're going to break down all the NBA injuries. Jeff, welcome. How are you going?
I'm doing pretty well. Yourself?
Yeah, I'm good. It's nice and early here in the morning, a fresh start to get ready to start my day off. How's things over there? You're in Dallas, is that correct?
Little Rock, close enough.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah, originally from Dallas, though.
Okay. Jeff, where can everybody find you on Twitter?
Twitter, you can find me at RotoWireATC, and then you can always visit my personal site, InStreetClothes.com, for the latest sports injury news.
I definitely recommend you hit up Jeff's website, which is InStreetClothes.com, where he's got, he talks about all sorts of injuries, injury database, just breaking down everything that happens in the world of sports and injuries, and it's definitely one of my go-to resources when looking at injuries, and that's why I've got Jeff on the podcast, because we want to talk about injured players in the NBA and what we can sort of expect from them. Like, we're never going to be able to predict things 100%, but just as we're starting to head into draft season, and obviously everyone in the Red Rock listener leagues knows that the drafts have already started for our leagues, you want to get a breakdown on these guys and if you're going to be able to get them as a bargain or if it's going to be too risky taking them in drafts. So Jeff, let's get straight into it. Let's start talking about these players who were injured or have had injury problems, and let's see what we can or what we know about them at this point and what we can expect. Let's start off with the Atlanta Hawks. Kyle Korver had ankle surgery after the playoffs. Are we expecting him to be back to full health? Now, he's an older player. He's over 30 years old. Is this an issue for him? Are you concerned with his ankle injury?
A little bit, based on where it was. It wasn't your typical ankle sprain. Usually when we think of the ankle sprain, it's on the outside, and his injury was on the inside of the foot. But what happens there is the ligaments are actually super strong and they'll tear away people. So that's what happened with Korver. It's going to take some time for him to get back into the swing of things. But he also had elbow surgery. He's kind of quietly become the king of this debridement procedure. He's had multiple debridements over his career, different off seasons. He's had foot, knee, wrist, and elbow debridements now, which is basically they go in and clean it up, whether it's scar tissue or bone spurs or whatever the case may be, and they basically take it out. I think Korver could be back by the start of the regular season, given that he's had pretty much the entire offseason to recover, but I wouldn't be surprised if he's limited early in camp and then really needs some time to adjust and get back in the swing of things. He's a guy that needs rhythm. He has to be, you know, consistently doing his routine, and he hasn't been able to do that due to the injury.
Yeah, now, the other thing with Korver is he's probably going to have to take on a slightly different role with Damari Carroll not there, so he might have to get used to playing more of the three instead of the two. Is there an issue with these injuries of re-injury? Is that a concern heading into the season?
Not particularly. It's still really hard to irritate the inside of your ankle. So where the location is good. I would keep an eye on it as a whole, see if, you know, if he does turn that ankle again in the opposite direction, does it have any cascade effect or anything like that? But it's pretty commonplace injury, and it's got a pretty high success rate.
Another guy on the Hawks that doesn't have a huge amount of fantasy impact but missed a chunk of the stretch last season and could be a relatively important player in terms of their overall success is Thabo Sefolosha, who missed a big chunk after that incident with the New York Police Department with a broken leg. Do we expect him back for camp?
It's possible. The fibula, the bone that he broke, is non-weight-bearing. I do know that they're bringing him along very conservatively. I think he's more likely to miss a couple games to start the season than Korver. The big thing for him is he's missed a handful of games in back-to-back seasons for calf injuries. So there is some history of lower leg problems there. He is a guy, like you said, that's going to be taking on a new kind of workload with Damari Carroll gone. And it's interesting because he doesn't necessarily have the huge fantasy impact, but he has a really good impact on the overall record for the Hawks. Last year, they were 17-13 without him and 8-8 in the postseason. And then when he played during the regular season, the Hawks were 43-9. And so the trickle-down effect of him being in that lineup, able to be that guy that doesn't necessarily need the ball in offense but can move things and play solid D, does have a trickle-down effect, like I said, on some of the other players, in particular guys like Horford or Korver, and it helps boost their statistics.
Yeah, exactly. It does impact the other guys. And he's a guy that you can stream in some leagues when you need someone, maybe looking to get two steals at the last day of a matchup, or someone who can go in and is going to be available, and he can hit threes. He's not going to score many points. They're not going to do a huge amount, but he could go out there and grab six rebounds. He could hit two threes. He could get two steals, and that might be great for a one-day pickup. So he's always someone to watch out for in that sort of streaming situation. Al Horford was pretty much injury-free last season, but he has had two torn pectoral muscles on both sides of his body. Do you slap him with that dreaded injury-prone tag because he has had those two torn pectorals, or are they just two complete flukes, or is it something that we need to be concerned about?
I think there's probably something there structurally with the fact that he tore both of them, but it's a freak injury. I don't think it's something that we're going to see happen again to him. My database that I have for injuries is complete from 2005 to 2006 when the collective bargaining agreement got rid of that, you know, mandatory five games missed. And over that stretch, I have five total pectoral tears, and two of those are to Horford. So I just don't see this being an injury that is something you can really prep for or should be scared of.
Yeah, I don't think I'd even really heard of that injury occurring until Horford had it. And even through our other sports, like even talking about guys in the Australian Football League, which I follow closely down here as well, it's not an injury that I'd, you know, ever heard of, and that involves a lot of, you know, arms overhead and catching and moving and that sort of stuff. It seemed really weird, and for him to get it twice, it just seemed like really unlucky. So I'm not concerned about Horford in terms of, yeah, that's going to happen again or anything along those lines. With the Celtics, Marcus Smart dislocated his fingers. I was there to see that in Vegas, and it looked very ugly as he was screaming and running off the court. That was a worry, but I don't think we got anything to be concerned about with that, have we? It looked like he escaped any sort of major damage.
Yeah, the big thing there is you basically have to wait for the wound to heal, because there was reports that he needed stitches to close where the bone came out of the skin a little bit. The last reports I heard were he was going to be cleared within the next 2 weeks, which would put him fine by over effect there.
And also in Boston, Jay Crowder suffered an ACL sprain down the stretch. This is not a full, like, you know, ligament complete rupture or anything like that. It was obviously a sprain is a tear, but it wasn't a full tear. He looks like he'll be okay to start the season. There doesn't seem to be any reports of any restrictions on him heading into camp.
Nope, it was a minor sprain, likely a grade one, so surgery wasn't required, wasn't necessary, excuse me. And it didn't impact his free agency. He was able to go out there, secure a deal with Boston. And I really kind of like Crowder this year. You know, he finished the year kind of borderline top 100 guy, but I think he's got some intangibles that could make him a nice kind of glue guy towards the end of your bench.
I'm so worried about all of the Boston guys because I just don't know what they're going to do. Like, is Crowder going to play 30 minutes? Is Evan Turner going to play 30 minutes at small forward? Like, who's going to? They've got just 12, 13 guys who all should get 25 minutes basically, and it's a real worry. It's hard to justify picking anyone maybe outside of Isaiah Thomas inside the top 100. But outside the top 100, take a risk on which way you think it's going to go, because at this point, we literally have no idea what they're going to do with their rotations. Now, we talked the injury-prone tag. We're going to get into that a little bit more later on. The king of injury-prone is Derrick Rose and his knees. He looked healthy through the playoffs. He looked almost back to peak MVP Derrick Rose. Should we be optimistic, cautiously optimistic, pessimistic? What's your outlook on Rose after that meniscus issue he had towards the end of the regular season last year?
I'm definitely cautious, you know, and with good reason. The guy has missed, if you include regular season and postseason, over 200 games over the last three years, you know, and then just tons of injuries. And really, he had the ACL, then he had the right knee meniscus, which he had repaired, and then he had it removed. So the risk with his right knee isn't great, or isn't necessarily, you can't injure the meniscus anymore. There is some risk for things like arthritis, and given his past, that could be inflammation or it could be some swelling in there. But Rose's style of play kind of lends itself to injury. And I think that's kind of where you have to kind of gauge that risk with him. You know, there's injury history and a style of play that are both prone to injury. So I think there's reason to be concerned here. And it's not a guy you want to trust and count on for a long, you know, stretch of his career.
Yep. Taj Gibson's had a lot of ankle problems in Chicago. Now, he's had ankle surgery this offseason, which was going to keep him out 3 to 4 months. Is this surgery that's something that may alleviate the problems that he had, or is this just something that makes you think these are ongoing and he's going to consistently have problems and they're just trying to do something to prolong his time on the
You know, court. it was a debridement, so he had some bone spurs and scar tissue removed, excuse me. And he should be good. I'm always, you know, ankle debridements happen a lot more than we realize. And I do think it's one of those situations where for a guy like Gibson, who sprained his left ankle at least three times last year, missed 17 games as a result, there was clearly some stability issues going in. So if they've cleaned up and are able to, you know, really focus on stabilizing the ligaments, strengthening the musculature around there, his risk for re-sprain should go down, at least for non-contact injuries, and should make him a guy that, you know, you can depend on a little bit. It's just going to be interesting to see how he's used with Thibodeau gone.
Yeah, that's the big issue. We just don't know that Chicago front court. If everyone's healthy, Gasol, Noah, Gibson, and Mirotic is there, there's not enough minutes for all of them to go around. And we've already heard whispers come out, or not even whispers, comments come out that Joakim Noah and Pau Gasol won't be starting together. So whether that means Gibson starts, whether that means Mirotic starts. And there were some stats that came out that showed that the best, you know, plus-minus on-off stats between that foursome was between Mirotic and Gasol in terms of their offensive contributions and the actual defensive numbers they were able to put up. That, strangely enough, Gasol and Mirotic had the best numbers. So we don't know what they're going to do. We don't know what Højbjerg's going to do with that rotation. But for now, Gibson feels fairly safe to leave out of standard leagues. Charlotte, Nick Batum has headed across in a trade, and he had a terrible season last season. But for me, I'm big on Batum heading to Charlotte for a couple of reasons. He had that wrist ligament injury that he suffered early in December last year. He also was dealing with some divorce issues with his wife, which clearly impacted his play. Do we think that Batum is ready to bounce back, and that wrist problem is behind him now?
He also had to throw in the knee injury that occurred early in the season and required a PRP injection. So plenty of reasons to think that injuries were causing the problems that he suffered last year. You know, he purposely did not go under the knife on the wrist to continue to play throughout the season. And that's one of those things where it's nice that a guy is playing because you can put him in your roster. But when the injury affects his productivity, you kind of would prefer maybe missing a couple games so that he can get 100%. But he didn't have surgery this offseason, really felt that, you know, strengthening it, resting it, doing the necessary rehab protocol would allow him to be back to the top form. So, and the change of scenery will help. So I'm interested to see what happens.
I think the Batum is ready for a look. His shooting percentage dropped by about 4 or 5%. He was down about four points per game. If he gets those things back up, he's comfortably a top 50, top 40 sort of guy, because he can dish out 6 assists a game. He can get you 7 rebounds. He can hit 1.5 threes. He can get 1.3 steals. He can get half a block, 0.6 blocks. He's got a great fantasy game, and he's going to be relied upon on Charlotte to be a pretty big part of what they do over there, I think. A couple other guys in Charlotte, or a guy who will pair with Batum on the wing, is Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, who suffered some ankle injuries towards the end of last season. He was really starting to come along. I don't think we've got much to worry about with him heading into next season. Would you agree with that?
I would. I'm shocked at how long this has kind of carried out, though. You know, he missed the last 11 games, and he still wasn't cleared in the summer. They were still, you know, waiting for the last couple of hurdles to be cleared to really let him go and play in full activity. So the fact that it lingered this long makes me a little bit hesitant, but overall, I think he'll be fine by training camp and be good to go.
Yep. Okay, on to Cleveland, where there's a couple of big stories here. Kyrie Irving with the kneecap injury suffered in the playoffs. Kyrie's another guy that we hear, injury prone. Now, he basically had a great regular season and then suffered this injury in the playoffs. But again, this feels like a freak sort of injury to me. Is he, the outlook for him, ready to go for camp and at full strength regular season? Is this a worrisome sign for you, for his future, his ability to hold up for a whole season? How do you see Kyrie's injury?
There's some red flags there. You know, the guy's missed on average 15 and a half games since going pro, and he had injury concerns in college too. So, you know, it's been for kind of a myriad of things. His shoulder, he had a broken finger, he had a bicep strain, and then the knee. So it's kind of been all over the map with him. And like Rosa, might be style of play, you know, a smaller guy that likes to go down amongst the trees and gets, you know, some bumps and bruises. It's just so explosive.
Yeah.
So the fact that they addressed the knee at the moment they did is good. They were proactive, You know, it was in the middle of the NBA Finals. They could have potentially let him play through, but they didn't. And really, he's on track. I wouldn't be surprised if he sits for some preseason games, is rested, you know, until the regular season. And then, depending on, you know, how the team does, maybe they buy him some rest. I know Cleveland's been one of the teams to kind of come around with resting some of their star players. And they can do that based on who they have, who else they have on their roster. So, you know, I don't expect Kyrie to play 82 games, but the value is still there. And if you can stomach, you know, potentially missing some games and stomach some of the risk, he's a guy you should, you know, consider drafting, especially for that point guard spot.
Yeah, I'm not too concerned about, look, assuming everything goes well, which we think it is. I don't think there's any reason to shy away from him. He could easily be a guy you take at the end of the first round, definitely in the start to the middle of the second round. He's going to have significant value. The thing you mentioned about the rest is important, though, because now they have a decent backup point guard. No offense to Matthew Dellavedova, but Mo Williams is a definite upgrade there. So they do have someone else who can take over and run it. And of course, LeBron's there as well. Another one of LeBron and Kyrie's teammates, Kevin Love, with the shoulder injury that kept him out of the playoffs. He signed the new Big Max deal to stay in Cleveland. Nothing's pointing towards him missing the start of the season.
No, and, you know, when you read the injury description, it sounds a lot worse. You know, left shoulder, anterior inferior dislocation with a sprain, labrum tear, humeral head bone contusion. It's a significant injury. I can't downplay that, you know.
Well, looks like we've lost Jeff here for a little bit. It's all right. I'll keep talking while he's gone. A couple other guys in Cleveland who had some injuries, Anderson Varejão with an Achilles. A lot of people forget that Anderson Varejão is still around on the Cleveland Cavaliers. But there's obviously Timofey Mozgov there. There's Tristan Thompson there, who do have their own values and not necessarily concerns, but they're going to take away Varejão's minutes. And not many people were able to come back from Achilles injuries at full strength. So to have Varejão there is not someone I'm necessarily taking any sort of risk on in fantasy leagues, because not only is he not guaranteed starters minutes, he's coming back from an injury and he's old. So that's something to be aware of. Jeff, we're back.
There you are.
We're back. We lost connection here. So thank you to the great people of the, I'm not going to call them out, the Australian internet companies, which is bordering on third world quality a lot of the times. We did drop out, but I am back. And basically, while you dropped out, I just mentioned that Anderson Varejão was coming back from an Achilles injury. But we don't, look, Achilles injuries, we're going to talk about a few of them in a sec. But it's they're definitely something that is worrisome, I think is the best way of putting it, especially for a guy of his age. But we'll talk about these other couple of guys who do have some Achilles injuries coming up in the next couple of teams. We'll start straight away. Dallas signed Wes Matthews to a big contract, and he's coming off an Achilles injuries. On a scale of 1 to 10, how worried are you that he returns to the Wes Matthews we saw in Portland?
I'm going to say 5. I'm going to say 50-50. And, you know, this really links back to what you kind of hinted at with Varejão. We're still learning a lot about the Achilles injury, as simple as it sounds. There haven't been a huge number of cases in the NBA. I had 16 originally since 2005, 2006, and 4 of those happened last year. You had Brandon Jennings, Wes Matthews, Varejão, and Xavier Henry. So 4 guys to do it in a relatively short span of time is a little bit worrisome. And really, next year is going to be a great case study on how quickly these guys can come back. Because the guys we had previously seen, guys like Chauncey Billups, Kobe Bryant, and even Varejão, Elton Brand, were all a little bit older when their injury occurred. Jennings is younger. Matthews is 28 when he tore his, which is about the same age as Elton Brand. But Matthews isn't a guy that, you know, whose game is predicated on athleticism in terms of, you know, above the rim play. It will affect his defense, which is obviously a little bit worrisome because that's his value. But I still think he'll be able to stretch the floor, hit the outside shot. And while I do expect him to miss some time, I think he's in a spot where he can work his way back. You've heard Cuban say he's a piece of the puzzle, and they're going to be careful with his return to play before they finally let him go and really see what he can do.
Do you think he'll be back to start the season?
he wants to be, you know, and it's not surprising for a guy nicknamed Iron Man who's been as rough and rugged as they can be. But like I said, I think Cuban, the med staff in Dallas, which is a great medical staff, understands that just getting him back the first 10 games of the season could affect that four-year investment they've made in him. So I wouldn't be shocked if he misses, you know, the month of November, but you're going to hear reports that he could be back or wants to be back, but I think Dallas is going to play it safe, and I'm betting he misses time.
Yeah, I would be shocked if he played, if he started on opening night. And that leads me into the next guy, Chandler Parsons, with this mystery knee injury that we don't necessarily know what actually has happened or what he's had. We've heard the term microfracture bandied about. Do you want to expand a little bit on what you know about Chandler Parsons' knee?
Yeah, so he had this, you know, he had developed the knee soreness over the end of the season. He missed six games and then aggravated it in the postseason and missed Dallas' final three playoff games and then had surgery. And Dallas is notoriously tight-lipped with what they reveal about injuries. You know, they like to play close to the chest, which is understandable, makes things a little hard for us injury guys. But you heard microfracture thrown out there. Now, I always tell people to pump the brakes a little bit because microfracture itself isn't a surgery, it's a technique. So just because a guy has microfracture on his knee doesn't mean he's going to miss a whole season like Amari Stoudemire did. Stoudemire had a very specific type of microfracture on the surface of his knee to try to stimulate cartilage growth. And that's really what microfracture is. You break little holes in the bone to stimulate growth. You can have it in your knee on the underside of your patella. One of the most famous ones I can think of is Marcus Colston of the NFL had it, was back relatively quickly. You know, so those things, just because you hear microfracture, you don't have to get completely freaked out just yet. The way that Parsons has progressed and what we've heard from Dallas so far, I don't think he had microfracture surgery. I think he likely had some scope work done, a little cleanup procedure. But what they're guessing with him, I don't think it was an actual microfracture surgery that, you know, that we've come to hear about so much. And even if it was, I think it's something that's going to be minor enough to let him come back some point this season, even if he misses a couple games to start the season.
So, because I was a little bit freaking out when I heard about the microfracture term thrown around. So in terms of Wes Matthews or Chandler Parsons, we should be a lot more confident of Parsons ready to start the season than Matthews.
Yeah, I definitely would think so. It'll be interesting because Parsons is one of those guys that's partaking in some work with Team USA. Does he ever actually get onto the floor? Does he participate in practice? Or does he just watch? That'll be a good indicator of where he stands.
Yep. Darren Williams has had a lot of ankle problems. Is this something that is likely to continue in Dallas? Has he had any sort of procedures over the offseason to sort out any problems? Or is this something that's going to plague him for the rest of his career, you think?
Well, you know, when he started having all these ankle problems, he kept saying, oh, well, if I have surgery, it'll fix it. And then he kept putting the surgery off. Well, last offseason, he had the debridement procedure, had those bone spurs removed that were causing all his synovitis issues and all these inflammation in that ankle. And he didn't miss a single game to ankle problems last year. So I do think he didn't miss time with a rib fracture, but I do think this is something that maybe he's turned the corner. And now that he's in a, you know, maybe a little bit more fantasy friendly offense, and is able to, you know, hopefully this may be it for him. He's got to reestablish himself as an elite point guard, or at least, you know, a guy that can be counted on to be productive and lead a team. If he wants to make a big payday next year, or a second big payday, really, because Brooklyn's on the hook for that contract. But I like Darren Williams. I think he could be a guy that a lot of people overlook, but point guards, Rajon Rondo aside, have generally done well in the Rick Carlisle offense.
Yeah, I agree with you 100% with Williams. The ankle problems, you're right, they weren't a concern last season. A lot of people, a narrative gets stuck in people's head and they go with it. Oh, Darren Williams' ankles, it didn't bother him last year. He was just bad last year at times. At times he was fantastic as well, but he didn't want to be in Brooklyn. He hated the system. They hated him. Lonnie Hollins was chopping and changing. We'd play him off the bench for stretches. He'd start Jarrett Jack. When he goes to Dallas, Carlisle's not going to start Ray Felton over him. He's not going to start Devin Harris over him. It's going to be Williams. He's going to be back home. I think that he's in line for him. He's not going to be back to 20-10 Darren Williams, but he's going to be a lot better, and I think he's going to be underrated by a lot of people. Now, we touched on Brandon Jennings before and his Achilles. he's in an interesting situation for fantasy because Reggie Jackson's there. So when he does come back, he's obviously they're in no rush to get him back because they need a starting point guard. So he's going to be eased back in at limited minutes. To me, there's no reason to look at him really in any standard leagues. But he's a guy who relies more on his speed, his quickness, and his dribbling ability than what Wes Matthews does. So to me, that injury worries me a little bit more. Do you see it that way?
Precisely how I see it. You know, I do think he's a guy that has a lot of questions outside the injury, obviously the fitness system next to Reggie Jackson, but he was a speedy, explosive guy, and that is the thing that generally tends to take a step back with this injury. So I do think his age is going to help in his recovery, but I want to see him back on the court and really how does he fit. And those are just too many questions that I'm establishing that make me want to really invest any kind of pick in him.
Yeah, the only time I look at him is getting him dirt cheap in like a dynasty or keeper sort of league, you know, a dollar sort of pick, and then hope that he comes back or gets onto another team next season. Now, in Houston, there was a number of injuries. Sam Decker, Clint Capella didn't play in summer league because of injuries. Not really too concerned about that. Donatas Motiejunas, though, had a back problem that shut him down at the end of last season just when he was starting to get going. Is this something that he's going to be done with by the time we get to next season, or is he still going to be lingering? Because I really like Motiejunas. I think that he should be their starter at the four. He showed a lot to me last season, but the back injury for a big guy is always worrisome. Is this does that fall into that category?
It does. You know, looking through my numbers and running all the things that I can for his procedure, which he had a lumbar discectomy where they actually remove a small piece of one of the discs in your lumbar region that was impinging on some nerves, causing that pain and soreness that he had. And it's obviously a pretty extensive surgery. And guys in the NBA that have had this, 75% of the cases reported some additional back problems at some point during their career, whether it was spasm, soreness, additional muscular strains, those kind of things. So I think the likelihood of something popping up at some point in the season is pretty good. I wouldn't be surprised if it does have a carryover effect into the regular season. And really, I agree with you. I think he's the perfect fit in Houston's system. He did really well. I like him, but I'm going to wait till a little bit later than most, given the injury itself and how problematic it can be for big guys.
Yep, exactly. If he was fit, I'd be looking at him, you know, easily inside the top probably 80, but there is that worry there. Now, one of the big injuries, Jeff, last season that impacted a lot of fantasy leagues and NBA teams was Paul George and his broken leg. We saw him come back the end of last season, didn't play a huge amount, which was to be expected, and everyone who was jumping all over grabbing Paul George in fantasy leagues, that was what I was trying to caution. He's not going to play much. Played like less than 15 minutes a game. He looked okay, but he looked rusty. Paul George this season, are we seeing 2013-14 Paul George? Are we seeing a 70% copy? What are we seeing from Paul George, and what's the prognosis from this? Because I've been really, really pessimistic on Paul George, given my experience with the Australian Football League. Guys who have had injuries like that, it's basically taken them 2 years to come back, if they're able to come back at all, and never to full strength. So I am extremely worried about Paul George. What's your thought on it?
You know, it's a devastating injury from when it occurred. You know, to have two bones in your leg break, to have a rod put in, the extent of damage done was significant. You know, it can't be understated. I do think Paul George is capable of returning to a high level. I do think, like you said, it's going to be probably one more year before he's at peak form. But I do think we get something close to that, or, you know, a 70% Paul George at some point this year. The Indiana medical staff is top-notch staff. They handled this injury amazingly well, given everything that was thrown at them. The fact that they, you know, Indiana was still in the postseason hunt. They didn't rush him back. Even when he strained his calf in the final game and they were fighting for a playoff spot, they didn't force him back out there. They knew this was something that they had to watch, and it's something he's going to have to monitor pretty much for the rest of his career. There's always going to be some kind of risk there, but I do like Paul George at a discounted rate. I think some people are going to invest in him thinking that he's going to immediately be that guy. But if you can get him maybe three or four rounds later than his average draft position has been, I think that's a safe play. The other interesting thing is going to be that shift to power forward.
Yep.
And I think he can get away with that in the East, where there's not a Memphis that has Zach Randolph and Marc Gasol to bang with. You know, it's a little bit smaller. You know, putting him up against a guy like maybe say Nerlens Noel or one of those guys is a little bit easier to swallow. But how are those legs going to feel when he has to go on a, you know, West Coast road trip and bang against the LA teams and Marcus Cousins and those kind of things? Is he going to be able to stand? So there's still a fair amount of risk. I do like the upside, but I still, you know, am cautioning folks, don't reach on him just yet.
Well, you mentioned you're trying to get him later than his average draft position. I've currently, all of the Red Rock listener leagues are drafting at the moment. We're doing them now. So I've got some rudimentary average draft position data for Paul George, and his average draft position in the 12 leagues that I'm running is at 14. And that is way too high for my taste. The highest he went was at 9, and the lowest he went was at 18. And even 18 to me is like, I don't really think I want to go with him at 18.
Yeah, that's one of those guys where I'd love to have him. Like, I'm not going to discredit that at all. I think Paul George is a fantastic player. But I think there are probably 20 to 25 guys that are a safer pick and potential to give you the same level of productivity, even better.
I agree. Now, next guy we're going to talk about is Kobe Bryant, who missed a big chunk of last season with a shoulder injury after missing the season before with the Achilles problem. Now, we did have a question come in about Kobe. Is it possible the Lakers will limit Kobe's minutes enough this season for him to be injury-free? Is there a chance they limit his minutes? They talked about it last season. Didn't really happen.
That's the $21 million question, right? Are they going to limit Kobe's minutes and, you know, potentially run the risk of irritating him to the point where he can make the locker room contentious and everybody's life miserable, basically. And then he's going to be a free agent. What do they do? And, you know, those kind of things. Because obviously the Lakers want him to be in LA. It's why they gave him that extension. They understand the draw of Kobe Bryant. But, you know, look, he's coming off of serious injuries in 3 straight years. He had the Achilles, then the tibial plateau fracture, and then this rotator cuff. I'm not worried about the rotator cuff. He's had shoulder problems that he's had surgically repaired before. It's the mileage on his body. You know, he's played, I think it's close to a season and a half, maybe 2 seasons of playoff games. You know, his minutes, he's in the top 10 for most career minutes played. And it's a lot of mileage for a guy. He's been in the league since he was 18. You know, he's been in the league for a long time played long into the postseason and multiple seasons. So, you know, look, I respect Kobe for who he was, who he currently is, how he's going to motivate things. But in a fantasy setting, I don't know if he's a guy that you want to have just for his name alone. I think LA may try to start, you know, cut back his minutes a little bit, but, you know, they need him playing to be good. And I just, you know, you look at the roster as it's currently constructed, and yes, they may give minutes to who else, but who, you know, like, Kobe's a guy that I'm not willing to touch because there's too many variables, like we talked about with a couple of the other guys, that just make me uneasy and not, you know, consider him a reliable guy.
Well, he's been getting drafted at pick 80 in my leagues. Is that late enough for you?
Yeah, I don't mind that, you know, especially given some of the shooting guards, you know, people that actually get to play shooting guard eligible in some of those formats. I think he's a guy that can still fill the stat sheet. You know, he can have a 2 or 3 good game night that can help you win a week. So I wouldn't be surprised if he rests a little bit more. You saw that before the injury last year. They rested him, I think, 5 times at least last year before he tore the rotator cuff. And I wouldn't be surprised if they do that a little bit more often.
Yeah, now, I think Kobe's going to score. He can get you a lot more assists than what you anticipate. He gets rebounds, but he's going to blow up your field goal percentage. So just be aware that if Kobe's sitting there at pick 80 and you've built a team that's, you know, got a decent, you know, average to decent field goal percentage, don't necessarily go, I'm going to grab him because it's great value, because then your field goal percentage is going to just drop, because he's going to take 20 shots a game. He's going to hit 38% of them or whatever he did last season. And with a shoulder injury, that even might get worse. So you can look at it as a bargain, but it's only going to fit certain teams. If your field goal percentage is already terrible, then yeah, that's a great pick, because you might get a guy who gets 26.5 for 65 games, and that could be beneficial. But we're definitely not looking at him inside the top 50. Memphis, Mike Conley had about a million injuries, broken face, ankle problems, but apparently everything seems to be all right for him.
Yeah, you know, the facial fracture, you're not really worried about. Bone heals. He had the surgery. It was a pretty nasty-looking injury. I'm slightly worried about, you know, his ankles and his plantar fasciitis that he's had problems with, particularly last season. But I still really like Conley. I think he's a guy that's going pretty much where he should. I don't think you're going to see him elevate his game. I think he's pretty much maximizing what he can do from a fantasy point of view. But, you know, I do like him, and I think he's one of those guys that some people underappreciate for whatever reason on draft day. Oh, and you can get a pretty good point guard for your system, you know, or for your team by somebody who might be scared off of these injuries, even though you probably shouldn't be.
Yep. In Miami, Chris Bosh had the blood clot in his lung. Is there any reason to be worried about this being a recurring problem or limiting him this season?
No. You know, we've seen guys come back from this and be fine. You know, it was a scary incident. Blood clots is something you don't want to, take lightly, but they've done everything they need to do to make sure he's healthy, you know, and I do think he's back this season. I think he's very capable of doing what he was doing before he got injured last year. You saw him be a little bit less efficient than he was when LeBron was there, but I do think some of the new guys, Dragic, may help him return to those a little bit more efficient numbers, even though maybe some of the scoring and other peripherals that had gone up will go down a little bit.
I think that Bosh is going to be a real steal this season. People are worried about him. People are also concerned of Whiteside having an impact, but we saw Whiteside and Bosh together last season. So whatever Bosh did with Whiteside last year, you can sort of expect the same thing. I'm not worried about Bosh this season. I think he's going to be a bit of a bargain player. Josh McRoberts battled injuries all last season. I haven't really heard anything about McRoberts for a long time. Is he ready to go?
It sounds like it. I mean, all his injuries happened off-season, preseason. Yep. I mean, he missed a significant chunk of the season, and it's because he had a repair on that meniscus rather than a removal, and that caused him to miss 61 games. He's not going to start back
at the end of the last season, wasn't he? If they were in the playoff contention.
Yeah, so I think he's going to be fine. He's an energy guy. You know, he's not going to start when it looked like that might be the case last year. I think he's a guy for depth. I think he can give you some intangibles. But, you know, I think he's not going to be a guy you're going to necessarily reach on it either.
No. With Bosch and Whiteside locking down the 4 and the 5, he's going to come off the bench and play 22, 23 minutes. He's going to give you valuable assists. He'll hit some threes, but it's probably not going to be enough to really get him in place in 12-team leagues at this point. He'll probably be a free agent guy, maybe. 14-team leagues, yeah, I'd look at him. But standard leagues with Bosch and Whiteside there, I don't think we need to be too concerned about McRoberts. Jabari Parker in Milwaukee was starting to really get things going as a rookie before he tore his ACL. When do we expect him back on the court?
That's the question. You know, I do think he comes back in the early half of the season, but if Milwaukee can get out to a good start, I think every win they get buys him a little bit of time. You're not going to see that franchise run the risk of something happening to their franchise player because of how the team is performing, you know. But if you do win, it buys him more time to maybe take a little bit more conservative approach. The thing with Parker, I do think he's going to be fine for his career moving forward. Looking at previous ACL injuries in the NBA, all the guys that have had the surgery before, I believe it was their 25th birthday, went on to have a career-high PER after the surgery. So I still think there's room for growth there. But it generally doesn't happen until the second season following surgery. Yeah, so
that's the key point.
I think you're going to see some adjustments made to how his approach is in the game. I think you're going to see some rust, obviously, when he comes back. And he's got to find his way with some new teammates in a new system per se, because, again, how does he fit into that so they can still be a winning team? So I like him. I do think if you're in a keeper or fantasy league and you can get him at a discounted price, do it. Because I think next year, the following season, he's going to be a monster. I do think the potential is there. But for one-year leagues, don't quite reach as high as you might in the past.
He's been going a pick 100 in my leagues, which is fine. I always say that after in a standard league, after pick 100, go wild, do whatever you want, because you're going to end up dropping 80% of those guys anyway. But he might not play the first month or two of the season, and you're right, they could ease him back. And even when he does play, it's always a rusty return from an ACL, so don't expect a huge amount from Jabari Parker. And it's not like he was playing at peak level before the injury, so he's got to get back to that rookie level, shake off the rust, and then start to grow. So I don't think I'll be looking at him in many leagues unless I get him, a pick 110, 120, something along those lines. If he goes inside the top 100, that's not for me. Now, Minnesota, Ricky Rubio, got into a bit of a discussion the other day on Twitter with was myself, Kyle McEwen, I think it was Van Burf is the other Twitter user. We're talking about Ricky Rubio being injury prone and people saying, I'm not drafting him because he's injury prone. I went the route of he's not injury prone. Kyle agreed with me. It just seemed like he had the bad ankle sprain. He had the ACL. Now, they were on the same leg. But to me, they're not necessarily related. Now, as someone who knows a lot more on this topic than me, is Ricky Rubio injury prone and is it something we should be worried about?
You know, it's fair to say a guy that's had major injuries on the same leg, left leg, is predisposed to some kind of injury. Except for in this situation, the ACL injury was a non-contact injury. And even then, it was kind of almost a contact injury. I think he was close to – they were playing the Lakers, I believe. Yeah. And he's kind of bumped into Kobe awkwardly. And then the ankle injury this year – was a non-contact injury where his ankle just rolled, ended up being a high ankle sprain, which historically take longer to heal than a regular ankle sprain. And then it didn't heal in the manner which they would have liked, which required the surgery to clean up some of the area. So the fact that one was a contact injury, and I think you can't necessarily account for a guy stepping on someone's foot or colliding with another player. You can't really hold that against him in terms of injury prone, injury history. Now, if they were both non-contact, I'd be more inclined to say, yeah, he's a guy I'd be a little bit worried about. He's had a lot of non-contact injuries on the same spot. But I don't necessarily throw Rubio into that injury prone category. If you take out the ankle injury, you take out the major knee injury, he only missed, I believe, 4 other games in his professional career to injury, and that was to back spasm, which is a common problem for point guards. So I'm with you guys. I don't think he's necessarily injury prone. Obviously, there's some risk there, given that he's coming off ankle and knee surgeries in his career, but I wouldn't slap the injury prone label on just yet.
No, look, and he was putting up really good numbers before. He was flying before the ankle injury. Even when he came back, he was putting up some good numbers. You know you're going to get big assists, good steals. He is, we hear about Rubio, he has, affects your field goal percentage negatively, which he does, but he's not necessarily a horrible shooter. He can't finish at the rim, but he's not Rondo. He can hit threes. He can hit jumpers if he's left alone. He's not just a complete non-factor. I think that Rubio is going to be a bargain this year. His people, as long as your team is ready to accept that you might get a sub 41% shooter, the assists, the steals, his rebounding is good, and he can hit those threes. I think he's going to be a real bargain, and I'm not worried about it at all. But his teammate, Nikola Pekovic, is he done?
I wouldn't say done. He's just not in a good situation health-wise or on the depth chart-wise. You know, you look at a guy who's had reoccurring issues since the second year in the league with his feet. He's had bursitis, which has just over and over been this inflammation of that bursa sac and that right ankle. It's been attributed to also some Achilles problems, which he had a surgery to address, which he didn't have a full rupture, but it did, obviously had some work done on that Achilles, which, as we've already stated, Achilles injuries can be problematic. And then you put him on that depth chart behind Karl Anthony Towns, Gorgui Dieng, KG. Where does he fit in? You know, he's one of the guys that I could see getting squeezed out for minutes or potentially moved in a deal if someone could, stomach that contract. Because I don't think he necessarily fits that youth movement in Minnesota, and he may not be healthy enough to be on the court with some of those guys. So he's just not a guy I'm going to want to rely on for fantasy purposes, because who knows what it's going to be.
And even last year when he did play, he literally gives you points and rebounds only and normally field goal percent, but he shot about 43% last year. He's not someone to look at for fantasy at all. New Orleans Pelicans, Drew Holiday, the stress reactions in his leg, the stress fractures in his leg. How worried are you?
Slightly worried, but only because I was so burned by him last year. Yep. You've seen it a lot recently with guys in this tibia stress reaction, which goes into a stress fracture, and then they have to have the surgery. It tends to linger. But Holiday was proactive this offseason, had his hardware removed. And all the reports I've seen, the workout footage I've seen from him is really encouraging. So I do think he's a guy that's you're going to be able to grab at a discounted rate because so many people are going to be, you know, afraid of injury. And with good reason. You know, you look at a guy like JaVale McGee, who's still not in the league currently because there's some concerns about his medical and that tibia. I think Holiday's case is a little bit different, but I do want to see him in some preseason action before I make him necessarily the starting point guard of my fantasy team or a guy that I'm going to rely on for statistics because I just, you know, the likelihood of something happening is there, even though, like I said, the early reports are very encouraging.
Yeah, you're definitely going to be able to get him a discount. He's going to be in that Darren Williams sort of, you know, 70 to 80 sort of range, and both those guys could comfortably jump up to be inside the top 50. And Holiday, if he's healthy, he's a top 30 fantasy guy because he gets a lot of assists, steals, threes, he can score. He's a really, really good fantasy player if he's healthy. So I've got no problem taking a risk on him outside the top 50. I think he can be a really good player. But it is worrisome that he's had that injury for two straight seasons. But I'm cautiously optimistic.
That's fair.
The New York Knicks, Carmelo Anthony had his knee issue that he shut down after the All-Star break. Everyone knows my thoughts on that whole procedure. But Melo's knee, is he old? Is this an old knee injury? Is it something that's to do with wear and tear? Is he going to be back at peak Melo this year? Or what do we expect from him?
It's not surprising at this point in his career. He's had left knee surgery in the past for a similar issue. The fact that he's supposed to be an active participant in Team USA minicamp is a good sign, meaning I think he's going to be healthy and ready to go for training camp. I do think they'll buy him some rest throughout the preseason in anticipation of the regular season. But I think this is just comes with the territory when you get a guy like Melo who's had, you know, a lot of these problems in his past, played a lot of minutes, heavy workload for whatever team he's been on. And at his age, you know, he's not a spring chicken anymore, even though it's hard to really kind of imagine that rookie class getting up there in age. It's been a while. I mean, they've been in the league for quite some time now. And, you know, I think this is just one of those things that you have to be willing to work with if you're going to invest in Melo. Because I think there's plenty of upside there. But I'm not sure I'm going to be that guy to run that risk.
If he's available in the 20s, I'm going to be all over him. It depends if someone looks to get him inside the 20s. But if he's around at 27, 28, then I think that's significant value because before this last season, he was a top 10 fantasy guy for about two or three years in a row. And not saying he's going to get back to that, but the upside is definitely there for that. Now, the biggest injury, Jeff, in fantasy circles in the NBA is Kevin Durant and his foot. We saw some footage come out of him back on the court over the last week or so. Where do you stand on Durant? He's ready to go back to 100%. Is the fact that he's a 7-foot man with foot fracture problems a concern for you heading forward? How worried are we about Durant? Or just your overall thoughts on this situation?
It's a tricky situation because it's a guy that is one of the top three players on the planet, you know? And he had all kinds of issues. You know, the Jones fracture itself, the location of his break is problematic in itself. It's poorly vascularized, meaning the blood flow to the area is not good. It often takes a long time to heal. The setbacks aren't uncommon, and you saw that. He got a little bit unlucky with the shape of his foot because the hardware was irritating a neighboring bone, the cuboid bone, so he had to have that addressed. He ultimately why they did in terms of treatment, and I don't think it was the wrong step to take. They just unfortunately didn't work out the way they had hoped. But the fact that he's supposed to be back on the court today with Team USA being an active participant in practice is a good sign for Oklahoma City fans. I think I would be willing to take him in the first round because I think the upside is just too good for that, good to pass up. And I think this is a bounce back season for him. I'm very optimistic of what will happen with Durant moving forward.
That's fantastic to hear for anyone who's looking at Durant. Now, I had pick 4 in one of my leagues, and Durant was obviously still on the board, and I was 50-50 about taking him. I just thought at pick 4, there is risk there. I went with DeMarcus Cousins instead. I was hoping for a big year from him, but I think pick 4 is probably the right spot for Durant in most sort of formats. You could justify, okay, you take LeBron or you take Paul or Cousins before him, but if you're at pick 6 and Durant's there, I don't think you can let him slide past there because you've got number 1 overall potential clearly. Tony Roten in Philadelphia. There is no point guard in Philadelphia, really. Now, even if Tony Roten's healthy, there's no point guard in Philadelphia because he's not really anything of a point guard or a basketball player. But he had an ACL injury last season. Now, there's lots of talk that they want to give him every opportunity to succeed, but it's the same ACL situation we're talking with Jabari Parker. Yeah, Tony Roten doesn't rely on smarts. He doesn't rely on shooting ability. He relies on bulldog-like tenacity and athleticism exploding to the hoop. Is that going to be affected?
Probably, but it wasn't as bad. His injury wasn't as bad as Parker's. You know, there was some MCL involvement, potentially some meniscus involvement with Parker's. It was a partial ACL tear for Roten. So I think the likelihood of him coming back a little bit quicker than Parker is possible. Obviously, Jabari Parker is the far superior basketball player, but Roten does have some things working at his advantage where he could be back playing a little bit more efficiently and at a higher level quicker than Parker. Someone's going to score some points and pick up statistics in Philadelphia, and it's one of those situations where it might be a guy you don't necessarily love, but he's going to get you statistics you might want to look at.
Yeah, look, he could go out there and get 15, 7, and 6 and do it looking horrible, but the numbers could be there. We just don't know what's going to happen with the point guard situation. So there's Roten, who was starting last year, and you'd think he'd be the logical guy to start. The problem is he's coming off the ACL. And then you've got Isaiah Cannon there. Then you've got Scotty Wilbekin, who they just signed. You've got Pierre Jackson there as well. We just don't know what's happening. Any of those guys are worth taking a risk towards the end of the draft, but Roten is probably the safer bet, as safe as a guy coming off an ACL is. We just got to be aware that maybe there'll be a little bit of rust to shake off in a couple of months, and then even then, beware, your percentages are going to be completely in the hole. Brandon Knight struggled when he got to Phoenix, but there was ankle problems involved there. We expect him to be ready to go.
Given that he's in Phoenix, yes. Yep. You can't downplay the significance of their staff and how good they are getting guys back. Not only addressing the injury itself, but pinpointing biomechanical problems that are causing the issue or maybe attributed to the injury itself. I like Brandon Knight as a bounce-back guy. He did have some cartilage issues in that ankle, and that could be a little bit problematic, but the fact that they addressed it when they did should give him a leg up of returning sooner rather than later. And you know, Phoenix is an interesting team based on some of the additions they made. And I think moving forward, he's obviously going to be a big piece of that. So you've got to keep an eye on what he can bring because he proved himself as a fantasy contributor. It's just, is he going to be ready and healthy to do that? And I like him. And like I said, you can't discredit that Phoenix staff.
Yep, definitely. Now, last two guys I want to touch on here, Jeff, are a couple of guys with some hip problems. Jared Henderson's had some hip surgery, and Darren Collison with the hip problem last season. Now, Jared Henderson's not a good basketball player. He's not a great fantasy contributor, but he is in Portland. I think that CJ McCollum is going to get the bulk of the minutes at the two, but is Henderson's hip problem concerning for the start of the season?
A little bit, because it's his second hip surgery on that hip. He's obviously got some labral issues there, whether it's a congenital defect or something else that's causing those surgeries, you know.
Jeff's dropping out a little bit.
Spectacular. But there is a new man in charge there. He's been there for a couple of years now, Stackpole. And I think he can help pinpoint the problem and potentially get Henderson back playing at a high level.
I had a similar injury to Henderson in terms of that label issue. It doesn't stop you from necessarily doing stuff, but it's just really irritating, and that's why he's having these things, because it leaves you in pretty much consistent pain, even doing regular things, let alone playing basketball. So he's not a guy that I think is worth looking at in standard leagues. Now, Darren Collison's probably not a guy that you want to look at in most standard leagues either, and that's not necessarily because of the injury. It's because of the addition of Rajon Rondo. But his hip problem that shut him down for the end of last season, is that fully ready to go, or is that a concern as well?
The fact that they have Rondo probably makes them a little bit more inclined to take it conservatively with him. This has kind of always been the unfortunate scenario for Collison, hasn't it? Like, he goes somewhere, somebody gets hurt, he proves he's capable, he's able to step in and be the man and show that he's capable, and then the spends in the offseason to bring someone else in or moves on or trades him or whatever the case may be. It's unfortunate because I do think, look, that guy has put together some impressive fantasy numbers for significant stretches throughout his career. And I do think he's going to be healthy to start the year. I just think, unfortunately, Rondo is going to kind of slow his productivity down and really hurt him in terms of fantasy productivity.
This is what we really need to look at with Collison, because he can play the two as well. He played the two next to Chris Paul in his season in Los Angeles with the Clippers and was significant. He was a great fantasy producer. But the Kings have got Rondo at the point, and then they've got Ben McLemore to play the two. They brought in Marco Bellinelli to play the two. So who's going to get the minutes there? If we see that, they run with Collison Rondo a lot, and Collison's getting 30 minutes split between backup one and backup two, then I think he should be owned in all leagues. But if he's getting 20 minutes because McLemore's playing and Bellinelli's playing and Rondo's playing 35 minutes, then it's no point. But it's all going to come down to how they distribute those minutes. And that obviously still remains to be seen. But the injury, from what you're saying, nothing to be concerned about heading into this season. I think that covers most of it, Jeff. Nothing else major we need to talk about that I've skipped over?
Not particularly. You know, there are some fears on LaMarcus Aldridge and his thumb surgery, but I think he'll be fine. You know, San Antonio is right there with Phoenix in terms of medical staffs. I think he'll be just fine. And really, he couldn't have landed in a better spot because they're going to manage his minutes perfectly. And I like that situation for Aldridge.
And Dante Exum with the ACL tear that happened just a few days ago. He's obviously not going to play this season. I think the main reason I wanted to touch on that is just that who's going to get the value there. I'm not convinced that Trey Burke's going to start for Utah. I think that Alec Burks might start a bit, will play a lot of point guard. Raul Neto is a bigger guy as well, even though he's a rookie as a point guard. He's 6'4". He can play some there as well. I just don't really trust Trey Burke to get anything done in Utah. That's all I wanted to touch on there with the Exum injury. Jeff, remind everyone where they can find you on Twitter and your fantastic website.
On Twitter, it's at RotoWireATC, and the website is instreetclothes.com.
So go and check out Jeff there and tweet him any of your injury questions. Check out his website and his injury database over there on instreetclothes.com. You can find me on Twitter at redrock_bball. Jeff, it's been fantastic having you on for your debut performance on the Red Rock podcast. Thank you for coming.
I appreciate it, man. Thanks a lot. Anytime.
No problem. And just remember to subscribe to this podcast on iTunes. Leave a review, leave a ranking over there. That's always much appreciated. And welcome to everybody, I should have said this at the start, who is listening on the Hardwood Paroxysm Network. I hope you're enjoying what you're hearing. And don't forget, if you are listening to this for the first time, hit us up and subscribe on iTunes. If you're watching this live on YouTube, thank you for contributing questions and for watching along. And don't forget to subscribe to the YouTube channel. Jeff, enjoy the rest of your day, and thank you once again for coming on.
You too.
No problem. Thank you so much for listening and watching. See ya.